It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking. Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you. We are just about into hour number two on a Friday edition of Overtime, which means it's Beat Up Your Neighbor 30. On this Friday edition of the show, we got Dan, we got Dave sharing the phone lines, but only one will triumph and prevail into a big prize pack brought to you by the all-new Uncle Ed Specialty Meats. It's time to lock horns and beat up your neighbor. In today's edition of the High Noon Showdown, Dan was our first caller. He is on List A today. Let's have at it, fellas. It's time for today's edition of the High Noon Showdown.
Put them up. Put them up.
Are you out of your mind? Because we could go to war. I'm for real. I'm for real. So you better check yourself.
Doesn't have to be a fight in the parking lot, although we'd love to see that, actually. It's time to duke it out in this week's edition of the High Noon Showdown.
The High Noon Showdown is brought to you by the all-new Uncle Ed Specialty Meats. It's a beautiful weekend and a great weekend to up the grill game. Head on over to Uncle Ed's on the east side of Sioux Falls for all of your grilling needs. Dan against Dave, and both of you should, I would imagine, excel in this trivia. I feel like it's a pretty easy slate today. Dan, we'll start with you on List A, my friend. You are up to bat here with a jersey number request for one newly fifth-year optioned exercised wide receiver of the Minnesota Vikings, Jordan Addison. What jersey number does Jordan Addison wear, Dan?
Oh, boy. I hate the Vikings.
Ooh. Hey, I like that, my friend. Somebody's got their radio up. Make sure to turn the radio down in the background, but I need a jersey number from you, Dan, for Jordan Addison.
I'll go with 17.
17, not correct. He wears number 3. Dave, your question a lot not easier. I don't know about your allegiance, Dave. If you're a Viking fan, there's no excuse for you to get this wrong. What is the jersey number for Justin Jefferson?
18.
Ding, ding, ding. Justin Jefferson wears number 18. How about a college attended for Vikings young pass rusher Dallas Turner? What was the last school he played for?
He was Alabama.
Alabama. My goodness. Roll Tide. Over to Dan again. Dan, you got to get this right suddenly, my friend. What college did the Minnesota Vikings starting tight end T.J. Hockenson go to?
Michigan.
Michigan. Not correct, Dan. Better luck next time. Dave, that was pretty darn easy for you, my friend. Job well done. I got the prize pack waiting for you. As you're the winner, you're the champ of the High Noon Showdown. Job well done, Dave.
Thank you.
All right, Dave, our big winner, 2-0. Here are the final questions, by the way. I work hard on these, so I'm going to have you scramble your brain trying to get the correct answer. Multiple choice, when was the last time the New York Jets won a playoff game? 2019, 2010, or 2008? 2019, 2010, or 2008, last playoff win for the New York Jets. The answer there, 2010. That was not too far removed from the butt fumble game. The Jets were pretty darn good under sexy Rex Ryan, but not good enough. Got to a couple AFC title games. That was their last stretch of playoff victories. 2010, last time the Jets won a playoff game. Other trivia question, when was the last time the Oakland / Las Vegas Raiders won a playoff game? 2021? 2016 or 2002. You know, the Raiders have been to the playoffs here and there, very few and far between. But the last time they won a playoff game, I was 11 years old. 2002, the last time they won a playoff game in the NFL. That was Rich Gannon and the Raiders. And I believe Tyrone Wheatley, Bill Romanowski maybe on those teams. That was a triumph over the Titans in the AFC title game before they absolutely got destroyed in the Super Bowl by the John Gruden, Chucky-led Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Your tiebreaker in the High Noon Showdown brought to you by Uncle Ed Specialty Meats. What is the lowest score to par in PGA Championship history? It was pretty darn recent. It was Xander Schauffele back in 2024. Let's move forward and dive right into your scorecard and your ReliaBank headlines of the day. Still to come on today's show, the NFL schedule release news you need to know. What does week one look like for the Packers and the Vikings? I got to tell you, I feel good. Not necessarily about the matchups. They always make me nervous because I got this run to work bet where somehow, some way, I let slip a couple years ago that I live close enough to work where I would say it's punishable. It's not fun. It's a lot of big roads to cross. A lot of people saying, look at that fat guy running down the street in the middle of the morning. But I'm happy to put my money where my mouth is and run to work should the Vikings beat the Packers, even if it is a JV game where J.J. McCarthy looks good against the six-string Packer defense. But I'm thrilled to tell you that the Packers and Vikings actually play early this year for both games, early enough to where it might not be 16 degrees outside, which, as a matter of fact, the first time at this post, at this job where I ran to work, it was 16 degrees when I left my house, and I hadn't run in years. But I'm getting a little bit better. Don't want to say I'm getting thinner and leaner and more fit. That's not true, but I'm getting better. So, Packers, Vikings, week one, I'm in. Afternoon slate game. I believe that game is in Minneapolis to start the year. And then later on, I think it's week 10-ish, will be game number two between the two teams this year. NFL schedule release latest around 12:20-ish. And then we're talking all things Packers. Stick around, Viking fans. You want to talk about a championship organization. Matt Frelick of the Pack-A-Day podcast will join us around 12:40. Let's get into the scorecard tonight in the NBA. Pistons and Cavs, game one, 6 o'clock on Prime Video. Cleveland leads 3-2, and Cleveland favored to slam the door on Detroit tonight, 4.5 points. The spread right now at DraftKings Sportsbook. Now, Minnesota has a big opportunity at home. They're looking to stave off elimination, prolong a series in which they've looked really good in two games and not so great in three others. Spurs at T-Wolves tonight, 8:30 on Prime Video. Spurs favored by 5.5. Jay Williams, how does Minnesota win tonight?
As Wimby goes, so go the Spurs.
Right.
So when you look at game, you know, two in their first round matchup against Portland, right? Concussion protocol, he was out. They lost. You look at game one, first round of this series, like he goes 0-for-8 from the field. Physicality, they lose. The elbow game, the right angry elbow, they lose. You have to be physical with him from the beginning. There's no way he can have 18 points in the first quarter of the way he plays. He has to be on his back each and every possession.
And that is Jay Williams talking about some keys tonight. How about what it means for the Timberwolves and Anthony Edwards if they exit tonight or over the weekend in this second round series?
It wouldn't mean anything for him. What? Because he lost in the second round? Because he lost in the second after he hyperextended his knee? Do you know how hard it is to come back from hyperextending your knee to play at this level? This dude, the last 2 years, he's been part of the Final Four. This year, he's part of the Final Eight. He has a chance to crack into the Final Four. Think about the upper echelon that Anthony Edwards is in. You said 18 career playoff games with 30 or more points. I know we love to live in the moment where we're going to make it a big damn thing that Anthony Edwards can't get his team over the hump against a 7'6 alien in Wimby. I'm just saying, let's just put it in perspective. Hyperextended knee, coming back, finding his way, and the success that's been there before. I'm just not going to make it a big deal if Ant can't get his team over the hump this season. No excuses, I'm just saying.
That's Jay Williams, I'm just saying. Well, I'm just saying, yes, it would be a small bit of a disappointment. I'm not saying the Timberwolves should beat the Spurs or should beat the Thunder. That would be pie in the sky amazing things that fans would expect. Certainly a few years ago, before we saw the reshaping of certain rosters, etc. But if you think about tracking the trajectory of the Minnesota Timberwolves, 3-4 years ago, you remember the postseason in which they hung around a bit with the Grizzlies and Ja Morant back when he was on the floor and pretty darn good. And you said, okay, you got to pay your dues. The next year they went further. You got to pay your dues. We're bumping our head on the ceiling here of who we are. Then last year they do it again, and now you want that again. Of course, every fan wants to see, okay, we got to the second round of the NFL playoffs. Let's get another win next year and another one the year after that, and let's take our rightful place atop the Western Conference. I'm going to say this. I don't think it's a disappointment per se, matter of fact, that they lose to San Antonio. If they lose to San Antonio, wouldn't be a disappointment if they lose to OKC. But fans have every right to say, Dang. You know, I thought it was our time. Maybe we're falling behind a bit in the pecking order in the West right now and may have to retool the roster yet again because they've already done that. They tried it with Carl Anthony Towns and Gobert, and then they ship off Cat and bring in Randall and Dante DiVincenzo and Iota Sunmu. They've got a very uniquely deep roster with a lot of dudes that can score and a lot of great ancillary parts and pieces that are still contributing. You feel like this is a uniquely good team in Minnesota. The issue, they got these other two teams that are better than them today and getting better as well in San Antonio and Oklahoma City. That game tonight, game number 6, 8:30 on Prime Video. Over to the NHL, Stanley Cup playoffs last night. Montreal beat Buffalo 6-3, a nail in the coffin, not the final nail, but Montreal takes a 3-2 lead. Vegas did put the final nail in against Anaheim, a 5-1 road win, an emphatic one for Vegas. They move on to the Western Conference Finals. They'll meet up with the Colorado Avalanche coming up on Saturday. Sabres and Canadiens from Montreal, 7 o'clock on ABC. Elimination game possible for Buffalo. They're favored on the puck line, minus 160. Montreal, of course, leads that series 3-2. Don't miss out this weekend if you're looking for something to do locally. The Clark Cup Finals officially begin tonight for the Sioux Falls Stampede and the Muskegon Lumberjacks. 7:05 the start time tonight. Saturday game 2, 6:05. Latest details, tickets, and everything you need to know, including a preview at sfstampede.com. Major League Baseball yesterday, big win for the Twins. They win 9-1, and it was Zebby Matthews on the mound for the first time this year. Really nice performance for Zebby in 7 complete innings.
Yeah, I mean, his last start, like we talked about pregame in St. Paul against Vegas, was really good. 8 innings, I think he threw 90 pitches, 95 pitches, and he carried it over. He executed his plan throughout the day. Changeup was good, fastball location was good, but overall, really impressive outing by Zebby.
And that's Twins manager Derek Shelton. Now from Zebby himself, how things went and how tough it was waiting in the minors for his turn this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think with anybody, you know, when you're, you know, you got kind of playing the up and down game between the big leagues and AAA, I think it can be tough, but, you know, you use that opportunity in AAA. We've got great coaches and great staff and a great team there. So you use that opportunity to continue to build things and, you know, work on things. And then when your number's called here, you just come out here, perform, and, you know, pitch well here.
And again, it's an overreaction to say we need Zebby Matthews in the starting lineup right now, in the pitching rotation right now in Minnesota. We'll see what kind of staying power he has. But Derek Shelton was asked with the struggles of Simeon Woods-Richardson and a few others on that rotation or on the fringe of the rotation right now. What kind of staying power does Zebby have after a performance like he had yesterday?
Yeah, I think when people pitch well or perform well, regardless of what side of the ball it's on, it always, you know, goes into conversations of what we do moving forward.
And that's Twins manager Derek Shelton. Minnesota with the latest win improved to 20-24. They win the series against Miami. They open a series against the Milwaukee Brewers tonight. 6:10 the start time, 5:30 your pregame coverage. AL Central Finals elsewhere yesterday. Detroit lost to the Mets at Citi Field 9-4. Tigers are 19-25 in a surprisingly sluggish start. Elsewhere, Kansas City lost to the White Sox 6-2. White Sox are above 500 for the first time at this stage in a long time, 22-21. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, Brewers and Twins, 5:30 pregame, 6:10 the start. Cubs and the White Sox from the south side, 6:40. Royals and Cardinals, 7:15. D-backs and Rockies from Denver, a 7:40 go time. Your NASCAR race over the weekend is the All-Star Race. Sunday coverage begins at noon from Dover Motor Speedway on Fox Sports 1. And into the National Football League, the schedules are out. All sorts of social media battles last night. Really interesting, the shape and the way that this has transformed lately. It's not just about getting the schedule out and seeing the matchups and dissecting strength of schedule, short weeks, rest weeks. It's about taking pot shots at your rivals and having your social media teams go to work on some pretty unique stuff. I'll leave it up to you with your preference as to which social media team did the best. I thought the Packers did well. Tucker Kraft was featured. Clay Matthews was in it. Micah Parsons, Jordan Love. A lot of different folks involved in that production. Vikings, got to tell you, good stuff. Will Reichard, the centerpiece. The kicker, Will Reichard, the centerpiece in their video release. My favorite that I've seen so far. Watched cover to cover. I think I've watched about 6, 7, or 8 of these things. Is what they're cooking up out there in Vegas. I can't imagine a better dynamic duo, a better boring dude in the Coles checkout line on a Saturday afternoon than the pairing of Kirk Cousins and Fernando Mendoza. Kirko Chains and the Mendozalorian, or the Mendalorian is what he called himself in the video. A Stepbrothers themed schedule release. A lot of fun for Vegas. Check that one out. But let's talk about the Green Bay Packers a bit. Ryan Clark saying there's one big key on the roster early in the season that certainly will remain that way throughout the year for Green Bay.
The word for the Green Bay Packers, in my opinion, is rush.
Mm.
And it's rush on defense, right? Once Micah Parsons went down last year, they couldn't create a rush. I believe it's why Rashawn Gary is now in Dallas. Offensively, the same thing. Look at what Josh Jacobs was 2 years ago as compared to last year. He was one of the best running backs in the league. And if you get the run game going, now Jordan Love can be the player we've been expecting him to ascend to be for the last 3 years. And the other thing, the last piece is don't rush Micah Parsons back.
Mm.
You have this easy start to the season, or teams that are lesser, at least as far as we project them to be this year, allow Micah Parsons to be as healthy as he possibly could be for the stretch of the season. And that's going to be on Jonathan Gannon, the new DC, to make sure this defense can perform.
That's Ryan Clark as of this morning talking about the Green Bay Packers and the pass rush. He's not wrong. Behind Micah Parsons, it's really a logjam and a mystery. You got Lucas Van Ness, who they just picked up his fifth-year option. We don't even know if he's going to play edge rusher, or if they're going to kick him inside to play that five-tech defensive end. We'll wait and see what he will be in the defense. Van Ness has been okay. He's not a stat producer yet in his career. Might not ever be entering year number four out of Iowa. You also got Baron Sorrell, Brenton Cox Jr., Aaron Mosby, newcomers on the roster, the dentist, DDS, Deny Dennis Sutton, and also Colin Oliver. There's a lot of names, not a lot of production experience or substance for the Packer pass rush. And in addition to what Ryan Clark just said, also very notable yesterday, kind of confirmed, rumored about Micah Parsons' availability week one. Not likely to be back week one. Likely to be placed on the PUP list, which Packer fans might grumble about. I'm fine with, because a ACL recovery for a wide receiver, a pass rusher, a running back is quite different than an ACL recovery for a quarterback, which you can be relatively ginger. You can take those light steps, limit your explosive movements as a QB, dirt the ball when you get in trouble, take a slide, fall over like Eli and Peyton used to do. Those are options at quarterback, but edge rusher, running back, receiver, cornerback, you need that explosive cutting ability. So yeah, I think Micah Parsons will probably take some time. The Packers are incredibly conservative with injury recovery, so that might be the play for Green Bay. Stash a roster spot for the first 4 weeks, and Micah Parsons gets going in week number five. We'll wait and see. That was the speculation yesterday at ESPN.com. Let's talk about teams that won't make the postseason. Ryan Clark says the New England Patriots might be in danger of doing just that this fall.
When you look at the Patriots, you were coming off of a fourth place schedule last year.
Right.
This year you play the first place schedule. You're going to get the NFC North. We know what the Minnesotas and the Chicagos and the Green Bays can bring to you. And then you also get the AFC West, right? So you have the Denvers, the Kansas Cities. This is a totally different schedule with different expectations. No one thought about Drake May as an MVP candidate, or Mike Vrabel as a coach of the year candidate, or this team being the type of team that could get to the Super Bowl. It's different now. You aren't sneaking up on anyone. I believe they not only take a step back, but in my opinion, the New England Patriots missed the playoffs this year.
All right, that's the New England Patriots in the AFC, a team that was out of the playoffs last year that was a surprise. A lot of injuries, a lot of inconsistency. Need to run the ball better is the Kansas City Chiefs. Here's Chris Canty talking about their offseason and a reason why he thinks they could get right back into the dance.
Health and availability of the others around him have played a huge role in what we saw last year, right? Rashee Rice dealing with some stuff off the field. Xavier Worthy getting hurt early on, that matters. The offensive line, Josh Simmons not particularly being healthy early on in the season. I think all of those key actors, if they're healthy, that sets up well for Patrick Mahomes. And then, oh, by the way, he's got K-9 in the backfield, a Super Bowl MVP, a 1,000-yard rusher. Patrick Mahomes, since he became a full-time starter in Kansas City, has never had a 1,000-yard rusher. So I think this is going to be a huge difference. If the Kansas City Chiefs are going to get back to the Super Bowl, and I absolutely think it's possible, they're going to have to adopt the philosophy offensively of what the New England Patriots did in the 2010s with Tom Brady. Remember, they went to, what, four Super Bowls in the 2010s between 2014 and 2018? In a couple of those seasons, you're talking about the New England Patriots being top three in rush attempts in the league. Kansas City has never been that. They need to start that part, that phase for Patrick Mahomes' career, having a dominant run game to support the greatest quarterback talent we've seen in a generation.
And according to ourlads.com, their depth chart right now at running back is pretty darn deep. They got Kenneth Walker as the starter, big name free agent, big price tag. They also have Emmett Johnson, the rookie out of Nebraska. But they are done with, for now, the Kareem Hunt, Isaiah Pacheco experiments, and certainly could benefit from a growth in run game and additional weapons on the outside, too, for Kansas City. Their receiver unit right now, Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy, Jalen Royals, and a bunch of Jags the rest of the way. Just a guys the rest of the way for Kansas City. Moving on, your scorecard, PGA Championship scoreboard update. It's day number two, and Aldrich Potgieter is the outright leader at 4-under through three. Other names near the top, Matsuyama, Lee, Jaeger, Smalley, and Scotty Scheffler. Two strokes off the lead right now as Scheffler is through 14 holes thus far on a Friday. D2 softball, Augustana, the 8 seed, nearly pulled the stunning upset of top seed Missouri Southern yesterday. They fall 6-5, and they got an elimination game against St. Cloud State, NSIC rival, 4:30 this afternoon. D2 baseball, Augie did pull a seed upset on that side, 12-10 victory over the 4th seeded Northwest Missouri State Bearcats. Next up, Augie in the winner's bracket, double elimination, facing the top seeded Pittsburgh State Gorillas this evening, 6 o'clock start time. For the latest there, goaugie.com/live. And D1 is softball into the big dance for the first time ever. USD Coyote softball matching up with number 4 national seed, number 1 seed in their region, Nebraska, tonight, 5:30 on ESPN+. Let's dive right into your ReliaBank headlines of the day. Jake Lundqvist had a pair of 2-run extra base hits late to help lift the Augustana Viking baseball team to a 12-10 win in 10 innings over number 29 Northwest Missouri State last night on the road at the Pittsburgh State-hosted venue. With the win, the Vikings advance to take on host Pittsburgh State at 6 o'clock this afternoon. Lundqvist finished the night with 3 hits, 4 RBI, including the difference-making double and a 2-run go-ahead triple in the 8th inning. Brandon Weigel also added 3 hits, 2 RBI. Troy Berg had 2 hits and scored 3 times. And Kobe Eichmeyer, who was highlighted on this show earlier in the week, scored 3 runs, had a walk while blasting a 3-run homer. Augie moving on the winner's bracket in that respective tournament. GoAugie.com/live to continue following along. The Augustana softball team opened up their NCAA regional tournament yesterday afternoon, dropping 6-5 in heartbreaking fashion to host number 1 Missouri Southern. Taya Speltz got the start in the circle. She allowed 6 runs, 5 earned, had a pair of strikeouts against one of the top lineups in the country. Augie's still alive. Double elimination tournament. And stay up to date on Augie softball also at GoAugie.com. USD men's basketball is adding to the coaching staff as of yesterday, as the coach Eric Peterson announced the hiring of Javon Coleman as an assistant coach. Coleman recently with Nicholls State, also spent time at Creighton and in the NAIA at Bruton Paker College, and also in the NCCAA Wichita Falls. You can meet the new assistant coach down in Vermilion at goyotes.com. And lastly, finishing up your ReliaBank headlines of the day, the Minnesota Twins, before yesterday's series-ending victory over the Miami Marlins, sent struggling right fielder Matt Wallner down to Triple A, promoted right-handed pitcher Zebby Matthews. And we highlighted what Zebby did yesterday, 7 complete. Really, really nice outing to start his season. Wallner, though, batting just 167, 3 doubles and 4 homers in 120 at-bats and a 551 on-base plus slugging percentage. The 28-year-old struck out in 8 straight at-bats before the demotion and has 53 strikeouts and 135 plate appearances. That is the worst whiff rate in all of Major League Baseball. So Wallner down, Zebby up, maybe to stay. We'll see about that. But Zebby Matthews certainly looked the part of somebody ready to contribute to the pitching rotation in Minneapolis and on the road. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number two. Again, our winner of the Friday Parlay today was Dave in a 2-0 shutout. Job well done. Friday Parlay, High Noon Showdown, brought to you by the all-new Uncle Ed Specialty Meats. The Friday Parlay posted up and live right now for you to enter on Twitter at ESPN Sioux Falls. When we come back, let's break down the Packers schedule, the Vikings schedule, and the broad strokes of the NFL slate in 2026. How many games are the Packers favored in? A ton of games for Green Bay. Certainly a favorable schedule. We'll go through the nuts and bolts of that, the Vikings schedule, and so much more when we come back on this Friday edition of Overtime.
Don't miss a moment of local college and pro sports action. Stay connected and download the app for Overtime on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you on this Friday edition of Overtime, talking NFL, college football, and more right now. In about 10 minutes, we welcome in a first-time guest to the show, Matt Fralick of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, one of the best Green Bay Packers pods out there, Pack-A-Day Podcast, and certainly a Packer-filled debate and theme the rest of the way here on a Friday edition of the show. We start with the team that also has a G on their helmet, but they're in the news for another bad reason. Georgia safety Jamarli Riddle was arrested on May the 8th on a pair of felony charges for possession of a controlled substance and a misdemeanor speeding charge, according to a police report obtained by WGIG. Riddle transferred to Georgia after playing his first 2 years at East Carolina. The felony charges are for purchase, possession, manufacture, distribution, or sale of marijuana and sale of a Schedule 1 or 2 controlled substance. Posted bond for all three charges. Georgia saying, via spokesperson, "We are aware of the charges and are actively gathering additional information. As this is an ongoing legal matter, we will not be providing further comment at this time." I will. This is absolutely positively out of control. Every 2-3 months, the University of Georgia has some young student athlete drag racing, wrecking cars, causing issues, wrecking lives, costing lives. This is so out of control. I can't tell you how many times on this show, in this seat, I've been telling you, let's get to the ugly on this Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Monday edition of Overtime. Let's talk about Georgia. Another athlete arrested, another athlete pulled over, another athlete killed in an automobile accident. This is so out of control, and it's getting to the point where you shake your head. People make jokes about it. Ha! Another one at Georgia. Oh, must be new to town. He's got to go get a speeding ticket. This is just awful. The regulation, the lack thereof of rules and defined, hey, if you do this, you're off the team. Hey, if you do this, you're not going to be starting for us week one, week two, anytime in the first half of the season. Whatever it needs to be, Kirby Smart and this Georgia athletic program, specifically, by the way, specifically the football program, it makes you sick. Because this is, I'm ballparking here, this is probably incident number 7, 8, 9, or 10 in the last 5 years at Georgia, centered around automobiles, driving under the influence, crashing through a yard, crashing into a house, costing lives, drag racing, things of that nature. It has been ugly for a while in Athens around this program in this specific regard, in this specific legal scenario. Again, I'm not passing judgment on the individual here as much as the program and the support system and the expectations. A cry for help isn't even enough here. This has been going on for years at Georgia, and all you can hope is that these articles stop showing up because something may have changed down there around Georgia football. Over to the Cleveland Browns. Colorado head football coach Deion Sanders said his son Shador, quote, went through hell during a turbulent pre-draft process last year and rookie season with the Browns, adding he believes both were rife with untruthful reporting. When he takes off his shirt, I see the scars on his back that he's been through hell, but he's made it through, Deion said in an interview with the Barbershop that was posted Thursday. He kept going. He matured, not like he was a child, but he matured spiritually. You can't force this. If it's not your time, it's not your time. Shedeur, a standout at both Jackson State and Colorado, was viewed as one of the top quarterback prospects in last year's draft and, of course, was Mel Kiper Jr.'s number one rated quarterback, but fell to day three and a fifth round pick, number 144. And if you recall, Shedeur was QB4, QB3 at best in the early portion of the season. They started Joe Flacco, worked their way to Dylan Gabriel, then to Shedeur Sanders. And I'm going to say this might not be popular. I was impressed by the very limited amount of time we saw Shedeur last year, what he was able to do circumstantially. Not saying he's a star, had a great rookie year. I was impressed based on the fact that he was able to endure the draft day slide from top five pick to top 10 to top 15 to day two to day three to fifth round. Then you get buried on a depth chart behind Joe Flacco and Dylan Gabriel and a couple other guys in and around the program. I thought Shedeur handled himself fine. I think he deserves the starting job this season if he earns it in camp, of course. And we'll wait and see. But yeah, he's not wrong. Deion Sanders saying that his son went through quite a lot last year. Absolutely, he did. Justin Jefferson's been through quite a lot of starting quarterbacks in his first four seasons or first handful of years. Six seasons in the NFL. Justin Jefferson now commenting about continuity in a Friday interview with NFL Network's Good Morning Football. Jefferson was asked what he'd like to see from Minnesota's QB Derby this offseason. Just competition, just to see who's going to be that last man standing, who's going to be that dog, who's going to be the leader that can carry us throughout the season, because that's definitely a missing piece. What we're looking for, something that's very important to our team. And just going to go out there and just connect with any quarterback who's throwing the ball. That's the main important thing this training camp, no matter who ends up starting this year. Jefferson would like to have a consistent QB1 throwing him passes for years to come. Yeah, that's definitely something that I want for sure. Definitely difficult for those types of things to happen. But just like me being with Kirk for those first 4 years, just building that connection, really hard to do for Justin Jefferson. Well said in an interview just yesterday. And now, let's talk about the NFL schedule. The Seattle Seahawks will begin the defense of their Super Bowl title against the team they beat to win it 7 months after downing the Patriots to capture the Super Bowl 60 title. The Seahawks will welcome Drake May and New England to Lumen Field in Seattle for the season opener on September 9th. The matchup was among many notables unveiled last night as NFL teams posted their schedules on social media, followed by the league's full announcement of the 272 games on the way this fall. Now, strength of schedule, we hammered this out earlier this week. The Browns have the easiest strength of schedule, followed by the Saints, Bengals, Falcons, and Colts. The hardest schedule in the league belongs to the Chicago Bears. Oh, man, you feel sorry. No, I don't. Chicago, hardest schedule. Miami, Arizona, Green Bay, and Kansas City. Those are the five hardest schedules this year. And let's start with the Purple People Eaters, the Minnesota Vikings. Their schedule begins with a week one home game to Green Bay, week two at Chicago, week three at Tampa, week four home to Miami, and week five at New Orleans. Then the bye in week six. So if you're talking about the bye week as a transitory transition period for Minnesota, they could easily be 0-3. Green Bay, Chicago, Tampa, two of those are road games. But then Miami, New Orleans gives them a little bit of a boost. So Minnesota could be 2-3, 3-2, 4-1, 1-4 at that stage of the season, a week six bye. Out of the bye, home to Indy, at Detroit, home to Buffalo, at Green Bay, home to San Francisco. So if you're keeping score at home, Indy was really damn good last year. Were for sure a playoff team until they weren't. Detroit, pretty darn good. Playoff team, they didn't get there last year. Buffalo playoff team, Green Bay playoff team, San Francisco playoff team. That's five playoff caliber squads in a row. Then you get some goodies from the NFC South, home to Atlanta, home to Carolina. Could be a win or two there for Minnesota. At New England, tough game. That'll also be a 7:15 start time, and I believe that's Thursday Night Football. They don't have the days on this particular release. Then their final four, home to Detroit, home to Washington, at the Jets, home to Chicago. So if you're looking for the story of the Vikings schedule, it's the early bye and tough start with an easy finish, easy-ish. Final four games, three at home, Detroit, Washington, Chicago, and at the Jets. That should be two, three, maybe four wins to finish up the Vikings season. Tough early, easy late, early bye for Minnesota. For the Packers, quickly here, Green Bay's got a very unique schedule. They're going to play a ton of road games early. They've got three out of their first four on the road at Minnesota, at the Jets, home to Atlanta, at the Bucs. That's the first four. So Green Bay's got, I would call that favorable first three, at Minnesota, at the Jets, home to Atlanta. Then they've got the Bucs on the road, Bears at home, Cowboys at home, Lions on the road, Panthers at home, Patriots on the road, Vikings at home. That's all before the week 11 bye for Green Bay. And this is the one of the earlier byes Green Bay's had. I don't mind week 11. That's not week 14. Week 11's fine. So the first 10 again, Minnesota, Jets, Falcons, Bucks, Bears, Cowboys, Lions, Panthers, Patriots, Vikings. That's feels pretty tough, but it pales in comparison to the post bye. The post bye for Green Bay features seven additional games, and one of them I feel good about a win. Here we go. After the bye, at the Rams on a Wednesday. So it's a short bye week for Green Bay. At the Rams on a Wednesday, that is the Wednesday of Thanksgiving. Then a miniature bye before they travel to New Orleans. That is the, yeah, I think they're going to win that game. Home to Buffalo, home to Miami. That could be another win there, easy. At Chicago, home to Houston, home to Detroit. And the one thing about the Green Bay Packers schedule is the home games are stacked on the back half. A relatively easy start, tough finish, home games on the back. And the other thing worth noting for the Packer fans out there is there will be Packer football on every single positively day of the week this year. Green Bay plays on a Wednesday. They play on a Thursday. They do not play on a Friday, but they could play Saturday in the season finale, and of course Sunday and Monday. So Green Bay's got 5 days of the week possible on their roster, on their schedule coming up this year. We'll take a break, come back. Matt Fralick of the Pack-A-Day podcast talking more Green Bay Packers next on Overtime.
It's so convenient. Sports on the go. Download the free app now. This is ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up a fun-filled Friday edition of Overtime. A reminder, the Friday Parlay has been posted up live as of about an hour and 20 minutes ago. Get your entries in for the Twitter-exclusive contest each and every weekend to keep you company. Congratulations to Dave, our big winner in the High Noon Showdown earlier. It is time to talk about the Green Bay Packers. Much to the joy of myself, much to the chagrin of a lot of you fans of the Purple Team out in Minnesota, we're going to welcome a first-time guest to the show right now, Matt Fralick of the Pack-A-Day Podcast, one of my favorite Packer resources out there. Pack-A-Day Podcast on YouTube, Andy Herman, Matt Fralick, and more. A ton of fun. Matt, welcome into the show. Welcome to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. How you doing this week?
I'm awesome, Bert. I appreciate you having me on. I realize Sioux Falls, the Dakotas, are polarizing, right? We got Packers fans, Vikings fans, confused fans, fans wanting a NFL franchise, but we're going to stick to the Packers fans. I don't think we're going to convert anyone over to the green and gold, but I'll do my damn best this afternoon.
Hey, I appreciate that. And we also got a smattering of Chiefs fans and Bronco fans, specifically South Dakota, East River, West River. If you're West River out there, Mount Rushmore territory, a lot more Bronco and Chiefs fans out in that direction. Matt Fralick, our guest, Pack-A-Day Podcast. Let's talk about the schedule drop. I thought the video was entertaining, featuring Tucker Kraft, Josh Jacobs, Jordan Love, Clay Matthews, and more. What did you think of the schedule, man? This is a interesting slate this year for Green Bay.
Interesting, right? We get, you know, every year it's fun. We get, usually now it's like, hey, we at least have an idea when the schedule releases. I know when I got into Pack-A-Day 7, 8 years ago, whatever it was, we never really knew. And I'm sure you felt the same way, Bert, being in the industry. It's like, okay, it's in May. We have no idea. Now it's more of a flagship operation. We do obviously know months ahead of time who the opponents are. But once you finally get the dates confirmed, how the logistics are going to work with travels and whatnot. It's good. I think it's fair for them. I mean, there's a couple things like within it, as we'll get through this, like between week 10 to week 12, there is a bye week, but it's kind of not a real bye week. They have a Wednesday game, which is odd. The Packers are set right now to play five dates or days out of the week that they could play a game on. A sixth one potentially on week 18 if they play on Saturday or Sunday. I'm hoping it's a Sunday game because otherwise they'd go from a Monday to a Saturday. But I digress off that. It's fun. Some good road trip games if people are trying to get out of the state and get down to the warmer weather. They got Tampa Bay and New Orleans down in December, but it's good. I think there's always pockets you can complain about. I think they netted out like at a minus two as far as rest days versus their opponents. Take that how you will. They have the easiest schedule based, or one of the easier schedules based on the strength of schedule, like fifth easiest, but that means pretty much nothing. And once we get into October, that goes out the window. But I like the schedule. I'm already eyeing up some games that I want to attend. I would love to get to that U.S. Bank game, home opener versus for the Vikings. I've always wanted to get there, but we'll see if that's in the cards. But I like it. We knew the opponents, but it makes it a little bit nicer now that we can set our family calendars, right? We don't want to figure out which wedding we're going to have to watch a game on our phone with the boys. So it looks in a good spot, and I definitely am enjoying dissecting it.
Hey, I'll tell you this, as U.S. Bank Stadium, beautiful venue. Ugly football team, but beautiful venue there in Minneapolis. Matt Frelick of the Pack of Eight podcast, our guest. Matt, let's talk about the holidays, if you will. The schedule for Green Bay, it's interesting. I don't know your take on this. I got to tell you, when the news broke yesterday, or the rumor broke until it was confirmed, that Green Bay was going to be playing on Christmas against the Bears in such a big spot, I kind of said on the air, I said, I don't really like that. I'm going to be glancing out the window in the middle of presents that morning. My wife's going to say, honey, what's wrong? And I'm just going to be, it's a big game tonight. Instead of focusing up on the family time for Christmas, we also got a Thanksgiving Eve game, which means my Thanksgiving's either going to be wonderful with a win in my pocket, or I'll be ticked off all day Thanksgiving. What do you like or dislike about playing on holidays from a Packer perspective?
So I like it in the sense, I will say I like it. It gives it's a very easy excuse for the halfway fans to say, hey, we're going to watch the game as a family together, whether it's extended family, near family. There are some sides of the family that don't appreciate sport, don't even want to be part of it. It does detract from the holidays. I think I don't necessarily love that it's a noon game on Christmas. That kind of puts something that, like, everyone's going to have to rush to get through presents opening, see what Santa brought, et cetera. It could also ruin your entire Christmas, right, versus the Bears. I'd like if it was later in the day, so at least we can soak our sorrows and, go to bed maybe with a bootful if need be. But I don't mind it necessarily. There's two other games later in the day. That's fine. It is on Netflix. I know that's another polarizing thing. It doesn't impact me all that well. Personally, but there are family members that I need to be their IT consultant to get them on to Netflix on their TV. The one that is really goofy is the Wednesday one. That's really strange. Like, I love the Thursday Thanksgiving. I think everyone does. It's very special. It's been very historic for years, decades within the NFL. The Christmas one's newer, but the Wednesday one's kind of bizarre. Like I mentioned, coming off that bye week, you basically turn into a half week of that, following week into the bye. Normally you'd have about 13 or 14 days off, depending where it falls. Now it's about, it's less than that. So it's not ideal in my mind, but, versus the Rams, I guess it'll be a standalone game, of course, 7 o'clock in LA. It's cool, but like Wednesday's just weird for a game. I would love it if it was Thursday versus, the Lions, or how it's historically been. But I guess as football fans, we have to be aware that it is transitioning into an international game, a global game. They have no international games, which is great. Some might say it's not great, depending on what side of the spectrum you're on. But I think every team takes their lumps with it. We do have a bunch of primetime games for the Packers, but there are, at this point, every year, it's like, as long as we don't have an international game and some crazy turnarounds, it's probably okay. But yeah, it definitely changes your holidays and can make them really, really great. Or like you said, very distracting in the morning, looking out into the abyss that is maybe a snowy Sioux Falls winter morning, hoping and praying the Packers can beat the Bears.
Almost a guaranteed snowy Sioux Falls on Christmas Day. Matt Frelick of the Pack a Day podcast. Nearly 40,000 loyal subscribers on YouTube. Pack a Day podcast. Don't miss out on premium Packers coverage on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. Matt, what's your initial forecast, man? Andy Herman put out the tweet a little while ago. May have been actually even, 3 hours ago, talking about the Packers' money line odds per week. They're favored in 13 out of 17 games. That feels high. Not too high. I would say maybe 11 was probably the sweet spot. That's the win total around that area. 13 right now. What's your initial forecast look like for the Packers record this year?
I saw a single tweet about that last night, that they were favored in 13. I also thought that was high. Going back through, he actually pulled the entire list. Still seems high. I think, I don't know what the win total is. I should probably have that in front of me. I'd be more prepared. I'm assuming it's like 10.5 or 11. I'm looking at some of these. I see there's just some that don't make sense to me, honestly. And at the end of the day, if I'm going to bet on them, I don't think you're winning all 13 bets. Like, that's just, like, what it is. I think you're at least netting 80%, 90% win. Obviously, there's always those goofy losses that come with the Green Bay Packers if you're betting straight up. There's definitely some decent value ones. You know, I would say week 7 at the Lions at 105 is okay, plus 105. I don't love the Rams one, obviously heading to the West Coast in that short week or that short-ish week. Yeah, it's just it's kind of goofy. Again, it's the strength of schedule stuff, right? These lines are going to switch a ton. Maybe you get it today, you know, May 15th, and you're like, you feel like an absolute shark getting in early on one of these. And you might also feel like a goofball not getting something later on that might have more favorable odds, like the Week 8 game, right, when they're playing the Panthers. Maybe that gets to a better line knowing that Green Bay is going to be at home, and maybe the Panthers are on a win streak. Who knows? Packers would be coming off that Lions game on a short week, but it seems extremely high to me. But I guess Vegas, as they always do, we try to be smarter with them with AI and all this other stuff that's out there. They know more than you and I ever will.
Yep, BetMGM 10.5, the latest and greatest win total projection for the Green Bay Packers. According to Moneyline, week by week, Green Bay favored in 13 out of 17 games, according to Andy Herman. That's at Andy Herman NFL. Let's talk and continue talking with Matt Frelick of the Pack of Eight podcast. Matt, let's talk about Tucker Kraft, Micah Parsons, Zach Tom. I think we found out just how valuable those guys were to the team last year when they went out of the lineup. How important are they moving forward, and what's the latest injury news you're getting or hearing about those three?
Yeah, everything's positive. You're absolutely right. Every team will have injuries no matter what sport. You can go down the line, right? And it's always going to impact. It's weak to use that as an excuse, but it's not. It's very ignorant to say, hey, the type of player and the type of caliber player and how the volume of those came in consecutive weeks didn't impact the team's trajectory. And obviously the icing on the cake was that Denver Bronco knee injury that Micah Parsons sustained. At that point, they were high flying. Christian Watson was back. Josh Jacobs was having a hell of a day that day, and Parsons going down just kind of was the final straw. He impacted a lot of stuff when it came to the defense too. Obviously in the secondary, they were exposed, but things are extremely optimistic because, generally speaking, the Packers are very conservative on how they approach injuries. They just brought in the tight end, Nick Lachey, out of, I think he was down by the Texans, brought him in off the waivers, didn't pass his physical. They had another UDFA tight end, I forget his name, but didn't pass the physical. So they're going to be very conservative more often than not. It's not surprising why they didn't draft Jermaine McCoy. Obviously, that slipped. The Raiders are going to go gamble on that in the fifth round. But nonetheless, Tucker Kraft is running. That's positive. Zach Tom's patella injury and surgery went well. Micah Parsons, everyone's like, hey, if he can play in week 5 versus the Bears, that would be awesome. That's kind of the trajectory right now, just looking at where they have so many away games, the 3 out of the first 4. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if he plays a couple snaps in the first 2 games. Now, how he ramps up, TBD. But outside of that, it's, you know, those big 3 that are coming back are massive, and I haven't heard any setbacks. The only one I'd be worried about would be Zach Tom. That patella injury, when he had it in that surgery, is historically a very, very touch-and-go injury. It can be one where the surgery went well, but the ramp-up is not great. There's some degenerative knee stuff around the patella, from what I'm told, as far as the nerves. So I'm no doctor or medical professional, but everything you look at online tells that it is the dicier one. They absolutely need him. They finished mid-20s at best in rankings of the offensive line. They didn't really address the offensive line all that this last year. They lost Elton Jenkins. They get Jagger Burton, which is great, but they didn't really do much. They don't really have a swing tackle, unless you think Darian Kennard can be that. So they need those guys to produce. They need a bounce-back year from the Luke Butkus-led offensive line, and seems like it's great, but thus far, I'm very positive. We know Devontae Wyatt's banged up too. He should be fine to go, but you know, you go down the list of the guys that you already talked about, Burton, it's like, man, ton of guys. We know Jordan Love missed some time. We know Christian Watson missed some time. Josh Jacobs, just to stay a little healthier and not be as impactful of players would be ideal, but that's sports sometimes.
And certainly is. The Pack of Eight podcast, wherever you get yours, on YouTube as well. Matt Frelick, our guest. Matt, before we cut you loose, man, which rookie this year that the Packers drafted? So Cisse, Danai Dennis-Sutton, you could talk about all these guys. Which one do you think has the best opportunity to contribute heavily to the Packers' success this year, and what kind of impact can they make? Give me a big name from the Packers class that you really think could have a big impact this year.
Yeah, we actually did this last week on Pack a Day Podcast, so if you want to go back and listen to that on Saturday, we're kind of talking about which veterans should be on notice, right, with the players that were brought in. Pretty easy to say, a lot of guys in the defense, two corners are brought in. You know, edge-wise, Denis Dennis Sutton, depending on what happens with Micah Parsons, he's going to be in that rotation for the explosive edge player when it comes to, like, Brenton Cox, when it comes to Baron Sorrell, and when it comes to Colin Oliver. You're asking for one name. I think Brandon Cisse. He is going to be at the front of being at least the starting corner, in my opinion. I don't think it's too crazy to think that he could beat out Nixon or Valentine, one of them. He could beat out both, but I don't know if they'll necessarily bench both of those guys or at least one of those guys right off the rip. So I think Cisse is, I don't want to say locked to get there. It just seems like it's a very easy trajectory to get in there for corner. There's obviously two corners at a time. That makes things mathematically work. Burton has a chance too. You know, if Sean Ryan cannot be that center that they want, he can slide in. Obviously, you know, the guards, Aaron Banks and Anthony Belton, had a tough time last year, one being a second-round pick, one being a highly paid free agent. Could see Burton in there. Clearly, they like him. His versatility is fantastic. You know, I think McClellan's kind of stacked up against it. Like, I think him getting in at nose tackle would be easy because it's, you know, some guys don't want to play that. You put Wyatt on one side as a three-tech. You put Hargrave on the other side as a three-tech. That's great. But I don't know if they're going to put him into that role. Packers historically are moving a lot slower with their rookies, especially on the defensive side. So I would say if I had to pick one, Cisse, based off of equity, based off of just him falling where he was. I mean, they got crazy value to get him at 52. Most people had him in the top 40, or at least the low 40s. So I like Cisse. I think the competition is real at corner, and that's going to be something that I'm going to try to get at least boots on the ground, eyes at training camp. Ray Nitschke Field will try to be there as much as possible and love to see the competition at corner with some of these young guys. But, yeah, I mean, honestly, if we want to throw one in there that's even more easy, it's Trey Smack. He's the starting kicker right now, right? Yep. He's going up against a wide-open mark. And, you know, I like Lucas Haversick. I like the story. Just, you know, equity-wise, you traded up to go get a kicker, mm-hmm. and you drafted a kicker. Let's talk about what we're talking about. McManus is no longer gone. He's been unemployed for the last week. So it's probably Trey Smack, in all honesty, but Brandon Cisse, I would love if he got a starting job. That'd be so awesome.
That's the latest and greatest on the Green Bay Packers. Stay up to date 365 with the Packaday Podcast at Packaday Podcast on YouTube or wherever you get yours. That's Matt Frelick. Matt, you're welcome back anytime, man. That was great to have you, and we'll talk again real soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
We absolutely will. Matt Frelick of the Packaday Podcast. Again, wherever you get yours, I got to tell you, show prep or show rewind, I'm always on the interwebs listening to Packer content. One of my favorites, without a doubt, the Packaday Podcast. Find it on Twitter. Andy Herman, Matt Frelick, and more in the Packaday Podcast. That's our show. That's our week of the program. We'll talk to you on Monday when the next edition of Overtime rolls right back around right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.